I'll see you in the golf course, Dylan.
All right, good afternoon, or good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. It is Wednesday, September 9th, and it's about 5 after 11. We're getting together for a work session on case number PU-15-90. The MDU rate, gas rate increase request. We had hearings last week. 2 days of them, I think just a week ago, concluded. And so we got this work session scheduled right away while everything is still fresh to talk through any issues and just kind of get a feel for where we are. I have some thoughts and can walk through some of the, I thought I'd kind of walk through each of the issues and we can talk about them, but I'll turn it over to my colleagues for any opening comments if they have any.
I have no opening comments.
No opening comments, just ready to get to it.
Okay. Then also gathered here, we have Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco and Jerry Lean, our staff advisors on this case. And so, we had the settlement agreement, which really settled out a lot of the issues, including the biggest starting point issue, which is the revenue requirement. And nobody objected. The interveners didn't object to the settled revenue requirement, which was $2.563 million compared to the original request of $4.301 million. I really appreciated some of the things that the advocacy staff found in and proposed to the company and that resulted in some pretty sizable changes to the revenue requirement, and those were all agreed to by the company. So I'm pretty comfortable with the new revenue requirement. I just wanted to get the read on that from my colleagues. Anything thoughts on revenue requirement?
Yeah, I can go first, I guess, Commissioner. The as you pointed out, it's always, you know, quote-unquote good when you get a settlement agreement because a lot of the issues get laid out. But it also doesn't let us dig in the way we normally would on a rate case. Funny, the first few rate cases I was involved in were all settlement agreements. They came in and you don't seem to have the thorough digging in from the commissioners that you might. But I think in this case, particularly, that the advocacy staff really dug in hard and got some good issues out of there. So at first, I'm always kind of, I don't know the word is leery, but always apprehensive about settlement agreements. But after the hearing and I'm seeing that how far the staff dug in and how the company back and forth, the give and take, I thought the settlement agreement really got to probably the best place that we could have ever hoped to as commissioners. So I'm quite honestly very happy with the settlement agreement. The issues that I had that I wanted to flesh out was the talk about the retirement and pensions. I thought that got discussed very well, and the MBU has made some really nice moves since this was an issue a few years ago. The part about the how you notify customers on natural gas outages, I thought the dialogue that we had on that was really well laid out. So really, to your question about settlement, I'm okay with it.
Okay. And I'm just talking about the revenue requirement part of the settlement. Okay. So I want to walk through some of the other issues. Any thoughts on that?
I think advocacy staff did a nice job not only of finding a lower amount, which is what, from the consumer perspective, they're looking for, but explaining how they got to that amount. It wasn't that they just said, well, we'll give you half or we'll give you two-thirds or some buckshot kind of approach like that. It was well-reasoned, issue after issue, where they were able to work with the company and find the reductions, and I'm comfortable with what they agreed upon.
Okay. On the staff or Lana, Jerry, any concerns on revenue requirement from your perspective?
Not for me.
Nope. Okay, great. Then the ROE was part of that, 9.5%, down from 10%, which was requested originally. That resulted in $283,000 adjustment to the revenue requirement. I'm comfortable with that ROE, and the company said they were too through the settlement agreement. So, and so did the interveners. Nobody objected to that.
And nor do I, and I will say this, it was testified to, I believe, by advocacy staff, but someone anyway, that 9.5 is the average of gas companies around the nation. And when you think of these last few years and the amount of build-out that is probably required in most places around the nation compared to the amount of build-out that's required in Western North Dakota, being able to maintain an average number, I think, is commendable. So I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. All right. Then the rate stabilization, that was part of the original request, and that came out with the settlement agreement. The interveners, particularly the AARP, objected strongly to the rate stabilization method that was proposed by the company. Advocacy staff also objected to it, and then it fell out in the final settlement agreement. And I wasn't real comfortable with what they had proposed either, so I am glad to see that go away, and we can take a different stab at something like that. I'm open to those kinds of discussions, but this just didn't feel like the right method in this case. I don't know if you guys have any other thoughts on that.
Concur.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. One of the changes that I thought was particularly good, I want to mention a couple things in the advocacy staff's work, was eliminating of the margin sharing for the small and large interruptible gas sales. That was suggested by Mike Diller, and the company agreed. That adjusted the revenue requirement by almost $270,000, just having the company retain those margins rather than share them with customers. I think that's an example of a commission directive policy that was from another time, and then now we're updating, and the time doesn't really call for that anymore. And I appreciate when we go back and look at those things and evaluate whether they're serving a contemporary need or not, and change them when they don't. And I think that's a good example of the advocacy staff coming up with one of those and proposing it, and the company agreeing to it. Let's see. So kind of settling down on, then we've agreed that the revenue requirement, we're all comfortable with what's being proposed in the settlement. Then it comes down to who should pay. Who should pay the revenues that everyone agrees are needed?
Man behind the tree.
Somebody else. And that's really comes down to this cost of service study and how these funds are divvied up. I do note that nobody objected to the cost of service study that I heard it, unless I misheard the testimony, but nobody objected to or offered a new cost of service study other than what the company is and has been using, other than the tweaks that Mike offered to the study. But none of the interveners said this cost of service study is totally bunk and needs and is not accurate and shouldn't be used.
There was some kind of innuendos that were thrown out there that we think this, and this, but they didn't offer anything better. So I kind of dismissed some of those as well.
Well, it's kind of like, yeah, well, if you change this, it could change this. Would you agree that some of the, you know, cost of service study is more art than science type of thing? But there wasn't a lot of heavy testimony saying it's invalid. There wasn't any testimony saying it was invalid. So I, again, appreciated the changes that Mike offered on the cost of service study to shift 100% of the main costs to demand, which changed and got to one of the points of the ARP, which was it changed the return on investment that the residential class is offering or resulting in, and also reduced the increase for them. So I appreciated that and like to support that change, which is then, I think, reflected in these final return studies that we have in front of us.
Say again what you just said. I didn't catch that. I didn't make all the connection of the dots you just said.
Well, in Mike's pre-filed testimony, he proposed changing the cost of service study slightly by requiring that 100% of the mains be allocated to demand cost.
Oh, okay, I'm tracking
and,
it now.
Yeah, and then that resulted in, you know, on his testimony, I forget which page it is, but...
No, I missed that, but yeah, really, thank you.
It resulted in a higher rate of return from the residential customer class. And so on these, like PSC 4A, 4 and 4A, right? 4A is the one that we asked him to submit as a late filed exhibit, I believe, which we have, yeah. On those, we can see where the settlement falls in terms of what would be required from each class. That would be on table 4, PSC 4. And that, the only adjustment we discussed was, so they're proposing a 3.34% increase to residential, 0% for firm general, recognizing that they already contribute more than their fair share of the return on revenue or return on rate base. Air Force, a decrease, small interruptible, 6.7%, 8% increase, and large interruptible hold steady. We did have them look at eliminating that decrease to the Air Force. That's in PSC 4A, the late filed exhibit, which we can see how that changes things, and it shows that the Air Force is now, rather than contributing 26% more than their ROR, they're contributing 48% more, and the changes to the other classes go, a little bit. The residential increase goes from 3.34% to 3.28%. So I guess I like the idea of everybody. I'm more comfortable with out having somebody get a decrease just philosophically, but at the same point, I think the Air Force made a pretty compelling case that they're paying more than their share already, and they should start seeing this become more equitable. They also did say, however, that they would support a 0% increase. So I'm curious if you guys feel strongly about either, or if staff have any thoughts on this.
Well, I first ask Alana a question. When the interveners say they support something, does that waive their legal right for appeal?
No, it just depends what they'd appeal on. It depends what they'd appeal on. And it would go,
the appeal
hypothetically, they could appeal on some related thing or a procedural thing related to it. But when it came to the question of weighing the evidence, that's where that argument, you know, they couldn't say, well, you ignored our evidence or whatever, because the evidence is that they agreed.
Well, I guess to answer your question, Commissioner, I like PSC Exhibit 4. I'd like to go with that. But if my colleagues want to go with 4A, I'm okay. I mean, I can see your philosophical viewpoint. In the previous rate case, the MDU, I was kind of the one about the fixed costs, keeping those as low as they can. I've completely switched on that now. I think that they should be paying a larger cost, because given the uncertainty out there, I think we should give more certainty in areas that we can. So that's kind of where I came down in this rate case. It's wherever you two want to defer on this, I could go either way. I like 4, but if one of you doesn't, then
it's not a hill worth. Marginal change for the residential. Yeah, so I don't know that in the scheme of things, it really.
You go 3.28 to 3.34, and that's vice 48 to 26. I mean, those are huge numbers.
Right.
And it is unfair that they're paying more than their fair share, especially the way they're going, and they intervene for a reason. So that's why I would say I'd settle on 4, if you're asking my thoughts.
I want to defer to Jerry with a question that I brought to him earlier today, and I'll tell you what the question was in advance. This trips the, if we would not do the rate decrease on the for the base and apply that money toward the residential class, that would lower their increase from 3.34 to 3.28%. But there was a dollar and cents figure that was thrown out. And if I, in all these notes, I know it's in here more than once, but I couldn't find it this morning. From memory, I'm thinking it was like $204 per month for the average residential in the original settlement numbers. But I'm wondering what that was for sure, and if he had a chance to figure out what it would be if we applied that Air Force Base $39,000 to the residential class.
So okay, I did check on that, and we had a number of $2.04 before. And now it looks like that number, if the Air Force stayed with the same rate, would go down to $2 even. Looking at rounding, and got a number here, 1.997 per dollars per month. I think you have to say $2 on it.
That's what Mike says in his cover letter, that it changes the...
Yeah, and that's from the Exhibit 4A.
They charge by 4 cents.
And so if you knock 4 cents off of the $2.04 that was presented at the hearing, it's $2.
You know, 4 cents doesn't seem like a lot of money psychologically. Maybe it would be important if it brought it down under two as opposed to over two, but it doesn't even do that.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's a more of a philosophical question of giving somebody one class a decrease when others are getting increases. I think that's different than even holding even. But at the same time, if we went along with this, we'd be making progress towards the philosophical goal of having people pay their more in line with their fair share of costs for service.
I did also check that in the past, we did one time not give the Air Force any money, any increase, along with the interruptible customers, and that was in the 2004 rate case.
Weren't they held even last time, too?
When was the last time? I can't remember what it was, but I had the 2004.
In our last rate case for this.
Don't know. I thought it was just the 2004 one. Maybe I missed something, but...
Well, one of the things about the Air Force is like they never got clear in their testimony, but there's young airmen and airwomen up there paying these bills too, so it's not like the mythical Air Force is paying these bills. These are people that live on the base that pay these bills.
I never had a lot of clarity on that.
It wasn't clear, so this is all... This
Did you
is,
guys understand that?
My understanding is that if you live on the base, that your utilities and the housing are included in your housing allowance,
which you forfeit when you live on housing. It ties back.
You live in the trailer court, I think you have to pay or something like that. But it's the way it used to be anyway.
Yeah,
but most of it's federal appropriations. However you slice it, I get that too.
All right.
To the extent that that you just look at the numbers and the amount of revenue that's coming in on that customer class compared to the others. I'm not sure if injustice is the right word, but for lack of a better one, I'll throw it out. To just ignore it because they're used to it or they probably won't go to court for it or something like that, in a way, hardly seems right either. So I wouldn't have a lot of problem with either of these scenarios, but I certainly am fine with making that shift that 4A references.
Four.
In rate making, it's called discrimination. Seriously, with such a high subsidization from one to another.
Yeah. Well, right. Four, puts us on the path to correcting that. And I think that we're...
That's humorous, Alana.
I think that we're on this same page with that then. So then...
For four, right?
For four, yeah. And again, I thought the arguments were pretty compelling. We're showing the firm general holding even. That's a lot of commercial business customers, right? Firm general, that covers a lot of the business customers. That class is paying, you know, more than their cost of service now, and so by holding them even, that wouldn't exacerbate that problem. Air Force would get a slight decrease, small interruptible, also business customers, small and large, they're getting a substantial increase, and the large interruptibles are holding even. Again, I really appreciate the discussion with Mike, the AARP, the company, all talking about, you know, the philosophy on how you set those rates. And to me, if you probably could try to increase those, and but if you lose one of those customers because they have other options, then you're hurting the overall cause. And that's, you know, that the numbers suggest that they're paying about right.
You know, when it comes to the large interruptibles, we had asked at the hearing whether they were all paying, whether they were at the top of their range or not. And I think all but one of them are at the top of their range, which to me implies that there might be a little bit more room to raise that range a little bit. You could charge them a little bit of this increase into that range, and then it's up to the company to get it. You're required to provide them a reasonable opportunity to earn this return on their investment. And if increasing that range, you know...
Where's that range set, Jerry?
It's in their tariff.
Okay.
There's a minimum and a maximum,
mm-hmm.
and then they get to negotiate in that range. And, you know, it's like we asked about the price of gas coming down a buck. And their competition is other fuels, and they change, and all of that changes over time too. But if you raise
the range, how do you assure that increases they get are result in a reduction someplace else?
You would assign that money to that class, take it from the residential.
How do you estimate what that's going to be if you don't know how many of them they're going to get that higher range?
You just assume that they're all paying
going
another.
Up.
Yeah, you assign that much more revenue, and then it's up to the company to get it. If they don't get it, they don't get it.
So then does that result in like a 1% increase? What would you be proposing? Is that a proposed rate increase then?
I'm not proposing.
Well, it sounds like you are.
I'm just telling you that you have that option here to apply some of this.
Well, and they have the option of filing a tariff update, and we could look at it then. Yeah. I don't like tinkering around our tariffs in a rate case.
Well, you
unless
have
we've got stuff on there that...
You tell them to file compliance with this order,
and then they
just add that into that, and they change all of their tariffs.
Right.
Isn't that when we do change the... Tariffs?
Yes.
All
the tariffs related to the rate case will all change when the order's implemented in the compliance tariff.
So explain to me how that is written in an order. What would this say if we do what Jerry's proposing?
You would accept their rate spread and require that the firm... The large interruptible customers get a certain percentage, which you pick.
So are you see the percentage chart there right now? They're at 10.5 0.58%.
And, you know,
so you'd
those
say
numbers
increase it.
It bothers me a little bit how much faith you're putting in those numbers, because you haven't approved any of the allocation factors underneath them.
In the cost of service study?
Right, the class cost of service study. I mean, it's not a given that these are actual numbers. It's just they're presented as...
Yeah, but we don't have another study to go by, Jerry, so yeah. What are we going to use?
You don't have
to... Like a depreciation study, you don't necessarily approve every item, but you are accepting, at this moment in time, the evidence, which is limited to that one study with Mike's tweaks.
Right. So what else would we use for a basis? If we're going to go in there and tweak them, we have no evidence.
Yeah, and, you know, in the past, when I did rate case, I always argued for rule of thumbs to avoid the customer impacts from being too great from one class to another, and not to put, not to apply the class cost of service study mechanically, because there's different ways to do the study. And we've got two ways here that basically showed you a difference just by tweaking the study a bit. It could have been tweaked differently or more. Some commissions will go into a study and say, this allocation factor is not right. And so you'll end up with an approved list of allocation factors on different things. For instance, was it reasonable not to charge any distribution costs to the Air Force? They're not, you know, the company will argue that they're not using the distribution system and they shouldn't be charged it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do that. You could say it's reasonable for a portion of the distribution system costs to be picked up by the Air Force.
Even though their service is just the main to connect to their own distribution system?
I think you could say that that it's reasonable to allocate a certain percentage to them.
Hmm. Well, I guess you could say anything.
You allocate costs. That's your job. And the allocation factors and so forth, we're taking them all as just an indication in this case of what things are. And...
If we were going to make these kinds of changes, didn't we need to ask these questions during the hearing and let people respond? And this seems to me like we're talking about a future case now.
I'm not saying that we're making these kind of changes at all. We're not making any changes to the study. We're just recognizing that the study is just an indication and a guideline. It's not a cast in stone.
No, but getting back to the possibility of increasing the top end of what they can negotiate with the large interruptibles, that would take a change here, and I just don't think we heard any testimony to that effect.
We heard a smidgen of testimony because we asked a smidgen of questions about what would happen. Is there some room for a small part of the increase? Okay, so you have enough testimony. You have testimony of the study and a few tweaks to it, and you do not, you're right, your first statement, there is no other study or any huge objection to the study that in the evidence that I recall. But so even if you just accept that study and that's what you're working with, and again, not approving it, you're just working with it to give a clue of what happens when you allocate the increase, you're really just talking about not necessarily allocating the increase. And I think when Jerry started, when he first started this part of the conversation, he was saying, well, you don't have to depend 100% that the large interruptible return is 10.58. It might be 10.5 if you tweaked something in the study. It might be 11 if you tweaked something in the study. And I think there's tons of evidence about that in this record, and I think you all know that. It's just like the customer one, the residential one might be off also. This is just a picture. If you bought everything that's in the study and you gave these kinds of increases, this is two pictures of how it could come out. Now, you could ask for another picture if you gave 1% increase in the top of that range to the large interruptible. How would these numbers play out? And I don't, I think Jerry was trying to say you don't have to feel bound by 10.58 or 55.86. On the other hand, it's not going to change by huge numbers. We see enough, there's enough evidence of the other changes to show that.
Right. And I would also say that you can mechanically apply those numbers if you want to. I mean,
right.
But you don't have to.
Well, the thing that has me it's a little bit intrigued by what you're saying is that Mike said he was relying on the company's understanding of their customers and what their customers can tolerate. And if you increase the range, the company would still have the flexibility to negotiate with those customers, and those that they can come to an agreement with, they do, and there's that flexibility still exists for them to negotiate with those those customers.
And they might end up like losing customers and losing a bunch of money. They might end up losing customers but making a lot more on something else. I mean, there's like all different hypotheticals out there.
I don't think they will lose customers because they still get to negotiate. But over the period of time that these rates are in effect, it gives them a little higher ceiling in their negotiation ranges.
Yeah.
And
when gas prices are low, that might be a time to provide that kind of flexibility.
Yeah. And there were
I hadn't thought of it from the standpoint of that. All of them are at the top of their range. I hadn't thought of that from this perspective. I looked at it in a different way.
I think they said there was one that was flexed down a little bit. We don't know how much, but
the company didn't ask for that. They didn't make a big point of it. I hear what you're saying, but I always get nervous when we start tinkering at this point in a rate case.
Well, it's really no different than what we tinkered with the Air Force, asking for a new scenario on, you know,
but we
on that.
Brought that out at the hearing. Yeah. We did ask for some questions.
Right.
I elected not to ask for that same play out because of the responses in the in my mind, my personal mind, because of the responses I was getting from Mike and from the company. I didn't go further with it.
And so I'm only pointing it out to say that you have these possibilities you can consider if you want to.
And to me, the impacts are kind of different. The two scenarios that we did regarding the federal government and the Air Force Base, you know, $40,000 to the federal government isn't a huge factor. 4 cents a month on residential isn't a huge factor. But start making alterations to these seven particular customers, and you know it's pretty hard to just raise some of them and not the others. You know, those customers probably figure out what each other are paying to and that sort of thing, and you price somebody out of existence, and all of a sudden it's an enormous hit to the company because they've lost that customer, and thus a big hit to everybody else. It seems to me that is a step that we would need to take with a lot of caution. I'm not really anxious to do it at this point.
Well, I'm not. Maybe my understanding is different, but I thought that these are the ultimate rate. We set the range. The company negotiates with the company. So if the company can't come to, if MDU can't come to an agreement with the company that they're serving on a rate, then
if
they don't pay it.
To be blunt, if you sign that much of the revenue to the farm commercial, to the large interruptible customers, it would increase the range that they can negotiate in a little bit, and it would reduce the amount of money that you're collecting from, say, the residential customers.
Because
you would assign it to the other class.
And it would be up to the
So it would be up to the company to get it from them or eat it.
No, it doesn't work that way. I don't see it that way.
Well,
I don't see it that way.
Yeah, you don't have to see it that way. I mean,
you're trying to drive.
You have your choice here about what you want to do.
And you tried to drive this by getting this study ahead of time, which, anyway, I don't agree with you, Jerry.
and that's your decision.
Well,
here.
We can tinker with any of these numbers, but I agreed that the idea of looking with the Air Force in or out maybe made sense because of this scenario, but we kind of agreed that let's get the Air Force more in line with cost, that to start messing around with large interruptibles. I understand there may play out the way he says, but I think the risk is too much.
And what is the risk?
The uncertainty you create. We don't know. He says you may collect more money, but you may not. You may lose people, too. One of those seven may walk.
My thought was is that you don't lose anybody because the company can't charge them any more than what the alternative fuels will allow them to charge. They know what that number is, and they won't lose anybody.
Price of gas spikes to X amount of dollars, and all of a sudden they switch to electricity because they've got Basin Electric down the road.
Then they'll flex their rate to them.
Why would we do that, Jerry?
Well, you're not.
Well, to spread out the rate increase. That's why you do it.
Yeah. Well, we already are trying to make a philosophical choice classes. To get them lined up more true with cost. Anyway, it may be a fine discussion point, but this is not. We should have talked a lot more about this in the hearing if we're going to go down this road. I don't like it.
And Alana's nodding her head, but I thought there was a fair amount of discussion about this during the hearing.
There was like a few questions from us.
I tried to put enough into the record so you could do it if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, we had a few questions, but they didn't go a long ways. You know, there wasn't a lot. It didn't go a long. I mean, that's why I didn't ask for the, I mean, frankly, well, for another, like, form so you could see that. So you could see the change if you did 1% or if you did a 0.5%.
And I thought that Mike was pretty clear in saying he trusted the company to understand their customer base. And if we were to change something like this, it would still be up to the company to understand their customer and have those negotiations. We'd just be giving them a different range because most of this class of customers are paying today at the top end of their range.
That's
might
all
suggest that the range is.
That's all
true.
Should
be broadened a little.
But he didn't. I mean, Mike didn't suggest that the range should be broadened a little. We asked some questions. Wouldn't this happen if you did this? But both parties were testifying that Mike was saying he defers to the company's expertise in knowing their customers that the range was correct. I mean, that's what I got out of the Mike testimony. We did have questions to contribute to, do you want to go here? But they didn't bite on it and say, yeah, we could. They were sticking with the fact that they thought that where it's at with a 0% increase was where the market was. I mean, the company was saying that. Mike was saying, I believe the company. I have no reason not to, kind of thing.
See, even the small interruptibles, I asked the questions about would there be fuel switching for some of those because they have a rate increase. And the company said they're comfortable with it, but I'm concerned about some of the small interruptibles actually maybe moving too. But I'm comfortable with where we're at, but I think we'll have to see how this plays. They're going to be back in here again next year.
Well,
they couldn't have been
and
any clearer.
What you're saying is right, but that leads then to the question of do you just make all the customers who have no other choice pay more? And I'm not comfortable with that either. If you know, there still needs to be some attention given to these interruptible customers to make sure that they're in the range of where they should be as well, not just giving them the lowest rate because they could switch.
You know, I think what you're after from your interruptible customers is to maximize how much money you can get from them and still keep them on as an interruptible customer.
Yeah, Mike said that too, and I tend to think that's a good approach. The question is, are we doing that with what we're proposing here?
Well, I thought we had an agreement in the three of us. It looked pretty good. And then Jerry interjected some thoughts, which are appreciated, but trying to derail the agreement that we were working towards.
Well, I appreciate staff bringing up things I haven't thought of. So that's their role.
I also think, you know, had this been under consideration the whole time, we may have had more interveners in this case too. And we might have heard a different side to that story. If we were discussing right now, if Jerry brought up a new idea to lower everybody's rates and really grow business and we'll just push it all off on residential, I would be sitting here saying, you know, if that was the original proposal, we might have had more interveners than AARP on residential if it was going to be a $15 a month average increase. Well, I don't know what you're suggesting would be on these interruptibles, but if it had been proposed at the beginning, if it's substantial enough to make a significant difference, then I expect it would have brought in interveners and a lot more information than we have now. I think it's something, my understanding is, it hasn't happened in the 2.5 years that I've been here, but my understanding is we can bring a rate case whenever we want, and maybe this is something that staff needs to be digging into some in the coming months and looking at these large interruptibles and doing some evaluation so we have that background either when we bring a case or when MDU brings the next case.
When your point about interveners, the way it's noticed is important. We had, it wasn't MDU, but we had a large industrial group intervene in an Ottertail electricity rate case, and right away they boomed a strong case and they affected the outcome big time. But if they wouldn't have been noticed in the initial rate increases, they wouldn't have intervened. So that's a great point I hadn't thought of even.
Well, was that an interruptible customer?
It was just a large industrial group that covered most of that was base load. I don't remember all of them. I think most of those were base.
It wasn't gas.
No, it was not gas, electricity. But yeah. The point was it was noticed that there would be an increase for large interruptibles, and boom, they were intervening right away because of the cost of their business model. They didn't want to mess with it.
Well, the large interruptibles, to me, are a different class, and the small of customer, because they have some negotiating power with the company. They aren't just taking whatever rate they're given. They have alternatives, and they have negotiating power that other customers don't have. So that's why you try to maximize your returns from them, knowing that they can either go to their alternative fuel or have the leverage with the company to get the rate that they, you know, need or can afford. So, well, let's let this issue sit for a bit. I want to at least think about it. You guys might have decided, but I'll think about it for a little while. Let's see.
Commissioner Christman had another question he was asking me about, and that was if MDU was able to put some kind of a note on the bill that would say what their charge was with a DDF if you accept the settlement and do away with the distribution delivery charge, what their bill would have been, or what that charge would have been if it still applied to them. They are able to do a footnote type thing on the bill. Distribution delivery charge has been eliminated. It would have been this much on your bill, so it would do the calculation.
Did you get that information from the company?
Yeah.
Could they file a letter and serve everybody with the information? I mean, it's just to clean it up, if that's okay. Explaining, because there wasn't any discussion about that.
I think that we could.
I'm just asking for a letter. That's all I'm asking for. What you just said from the company served on everybody else.
So, what the attorneys talk about that?
Attorneys are probably meeting on two other issues in a post-hearing conference, so we can talk about that then, if that's
okay.
All right.
I think it's a good thing to point out because, I mean, news will spread fast and for a long time be reemphasized about any increases, but any decreases are, you know, never as interesting to talk about. And so I think to have that acknowledged, because it is a balancing thing that
sure
we've
is.
Discussed long and often throughout this case. And so I think having that acknowledged on the bill for, I don't know, 6 months or 9 months or something, kind of at least into the winter, if not through the winter, I think is a good reminder to folks.
Right. That's a good point. Say, if we're done with that and you'll work out the letter, if I could return to this issue just briefly, is it possible to get these numbers rerun? Can you run them, Jerry, or with the with a tweak to the large interruptible?
I can do something.
You can, but I think it's safer if you just, ask the parties to produce another exhibit, just like this one, if that's what you want. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities that I thought of even at the hearing, like if you didn't want to give small interruptible as big an increase, I mean, you can go on down the line, but be specific about what you want to see, and then we will formally ask them, and they will serve it, and then you can decide if it's going to be part of the record.
So if you wanted to ask for something like that, you should say what you're thinking for a percentage in that class on the increase is like 1% would be half the increase overall.
Right. I was thinking about 1% just to see what that does.
And would you take that all from residential then?
Probably, since they're getting
Or you could split it between residential and small interruptible.
Yeah, share it because they're both getting the increases.
Half and half or proportionately? I don't care. I'm just making it clear.
Proportionate would be to their... How would you do proportionate?
Whatever amount of... If residential brings in twice as much revenue as small interruptible, would you apply two-thirds of the additional revenues that you're getting from the large interruptibles to residential and a third to the small interruptibles, or half and half?
I would just do, in fact, it would be good to see both, one all residential and one half percent small interruptible, half percent residential.
Not to throw any more complications in, but should we do that with the Air Force at 0%?
No, I think leave the Air Force where it is.
With the decrease?
Yeah.
With the alignment of true cost to service, not a decrease. It's all you sell this thing. Mm-hmm. We're not decreasing their costs. We're aligning them better to what they're using.
That's discrimination.
To decrease the amount they're being discriminated against is what we're doing. I mean, that's what we're doing, and I'm going to make that point clear.
Very paying for nothing.
Comes out.
Okay.
I'll write your emails this year, Jerry.
What matters is the decision. We're just looking at information right now.
No, but this is good. That's what advocacy or advisory staff is supposed to do, is point out all the things, so I appreciate that, Jerry.
All right.
I did want to talk a little bit about the fixed charge, and I thought that there was some good discussion.
When do you want this stuff, Commissioner? For the
I think our orders. When is the draft orders due?
I didn't write it down.
It was at the end of the month, wasn't it?
And I don't recall. And there's still one. I think there's one exhibit still due from MDU, if I'm not mistaken. So.
I think
ask somebody like Jack or Tammy.
We'll set by the next work session. Okay. And so we'll set that.
Probably in October.
Date here before too long. Because it would probably be good to. You have a thought on that?
Are we setting another work session at this?
I'd like to at the end of it.
Okay. Well, let me go ask what the original due date is then.
Okay.
I know that there's an interim rate in effect, and the customers are going to get something back. So we don't want to. We're not like, I don't want to sit this around forever, but at the same time, we need time to do what we got to do.
Well, and they don't even have the draft orders yet, so we're still, you know, well ahead of what even the company is going to be getting us. So,
do listen to us as they draft their orders, too.
Yep. Okay, so the fixed charge. We haven't really discussed that philosophically since the last rate case.
I gave you my thoughts.
You threw yours out there. I thought that the pros outlined in the 11 points that advocacy staff identified outweighed, you know, the cons that the ARP has said. I was moving towards this direction the last time in the last rate case. I do think in this environment with distributed generation becoming a more realistic issue down the road, it is important to be sending the right cost messages to customers. And, you know, the ARP regularly says that, you know, the putting it on the distribution charge or the direct costs, then, you know, charges customers to just to have service, just to have the service. And that is kind of the whole point. We're saying this is what it costs to be connected to this service, regardless of how much you use. And I get that that's not a real popular message, but I think it's a honest message, and I think it's the right message to send to customers. So I am comfortable with using that as the rate revenue delivery tool in this case. I don't know what your thoughts are, Randy.
To abbreviate, you said you preferred the method the settlement recommended as opposed to what AARP was recommending, correct?
Well, AARP didn't really have a recommendation.
Well, they opposed. You preferred what the settlement recommended?
Yes.
Agreed. Yeah. And I just want to add one more reason than what you had just mentioned, because I agree with you. Okay. But although this is kind of the opposite rationale for off of the same point, the current system of the very low fixed charge, to me, sends a direct subsidy to a lot of folks who have the most means and just decide, since it's only a few bucks a month, I'll have another gas hookup over in my garage or in my little cabin or in my hunting shed or at my farm well, if it happens to be near a gas delivery system, because it only costs a few bucks a month. And so I might as well do it anyway. And frankly, they're being subsidized by a lot of people on fixed incomes or on low income who have the homes, who don't have an energy efficient furnace, aren't the best insulated, don't have new doors and windows and that sort of thing. And so frankly, I think that the direction that the settlement goes actually helps a lot of low and fixed income situations more than it harms.
I am interested to get that graph that the company is providing. I don't believe we've seen that yet of their spread in usage between customers.
Yes, no, we have. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Okay, because I do think that will tell us as much as anything can how many really light users there are and how many really heavy users there are and how many are just right kind of in the middle where it's not, you know, the distribution delivery charge isn't going to make much difference. So
what was one exhibit that showed that the cost actually play out over a year? I can't find that. That showed that even when you're with the basic fixed charge gets raised, it's you pay less certain times a year and pay more certain times a year.
Oops.
It cancels out to be almost the same. I think that's one we want to highlight too.
Yeah, that was in their testimony at the hearing. Yeah, in the PowerPoint. Was that in a binder?
I didn't bring that binder.
But anyway, I just
it certainly balances that out, and so you end up paying more in the summer and less in the winter.
Right. So I think that's one thing that helped. That was the case before, too, but coupled with what you both said in that fact, that's why I changed my viewpoint. So I want to highlight that as this thing plays out, too. It doesn't. There you go. We'll use that again down the road.
Okay.
The proposed orders are due the 25th. So
all right.
I expect the exhibits by then or earlier.
All right. Okay. Then the one other question I wanted to ask about, which was brought up by you, Commissioner Kalk, during the hearing, and I was really pleased that you brought it up so many times, a few times, and that was that the notification. Where did we settle on that? How customers were going to be notified in outages, and there was some good discussion, but I didn't recall if there was anything specific we were going to call for in this order, if the company just agreed to some certain steps.
No, I think my recollection is the same as yours, that we brought it up a lot, but never actually said exactly what they're going to do. We asked if they needed I asked if they needed additional monies to upgrade their system to, you know, get it to be the new WhizBang system, and they said no, they've got enough resources to do it. They're now making commitment to do more things with texting, with online, to build more of a state of the art system, and kind of that's where kind of it got left at. Their HRMS, yeah, not HR, what witness. I'm looking for a name here.
Yeah, Ann, wasn't it Ann?
Yeah, and there we go. So, and then we kind of left it where they would come back at one of the next PI meeting. Ann Jones, here we go. That they would come back at one of the next PI meeting and let us know exactly what they're going to do. And so, I guess I was happy with that in the sense that satisfied with that. That we asked if they needed more resources. They said no. There was commitment that they're going to continue to upgrade their system to make it more app-friendly, if you will, and they would give us an update at a future PI meeting. That's the way I had it wrapped in my notes here.
Okay. All right.
We could put a finding in the order if we wanted to that reflected that, but maybe that isn't needed.
All right. We can think about that one, too, prior to the next hearing or work session. Okay. Do you have anything else you want to talk about, Randy?
One more small one. I guess I didn't take good notes. I remember it being brought up. I don't remember where we're at with it. But there was discussion about a big increase in the fees that the company could charge for NSF checks.
Yeah.
I checked, and there was no increase in the NSF charge. Still $15.
Okay.
Okay.
As I think it should stay.
Anything more for you, Brian?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Should we, anything else from you guys? We've got our marching orders.
Should schedule a work session, perhaps.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. I have my phone sitting here for that purpose.
And Randy's got his iPad.
Do we want to do it after the proposed orders are in?
Yes. There isn't any time.
I don't know if we have any time.
There isn't any time between now and then for me, anyway.
Okay.
I looked at our schedule and we're whomped.
Things do.
So we're in October.
How about the 1st?
Of October?
Yeah.
I got something highlighted here. Formal hearing.
October 1st? Oh, wait, I must be in November.
No, we must not, September. Because I'm in Fargo unless we do it like at 7.
Yep.
Okay. So the 1st is out. 2nd?
I'm okay on the 2nd.
Was that the date that was possible for the EPA?
I heard that. I don't know.
Clean air?
From a scheduling standpoint, are you looking at the 2nd for something else, Vic, for the clean air stuff? Okay.
Could we do it on the 5th? We have a work session scheduled for 3:30 that day. Could we do one at 2:30?
I'm tied up from 1 to 3:30. That's why we're so late that day.
Okay.
Could do it in the morning.
Yeah, that would be better than Friday because I have the same commitment Randy does.
On the morning of October 5th on Monday?
No, on the 1st. And then I schedule some meetings the 2nd over in the eastern part of the state.
Well, on the 1st.
The morning of the 1st? I'm open.
Well, the meeting is over lunch. I don't remember if it starts at 11:30 or 12 or what. I just didn't write it down on here. But
okay. The 2nd, let's go. The 2nd doesn't work for you guys? Oh, you're out east. Okay, then let's go with the 5th in the morning. I thought somebody had a conflict that time.
You know what? I can make the morning of the 2nd work. I got plenty of time. I can move that stuff around. That's easier. Get it done with.
10?
Sure.
Either of the mornings work for me.
Do you want a little more time? 10:30, Brian? Are you coming in that morning from Fargo?
Yeah.
Or 11?
Eleven would be better, actually.
Okay, let's say 11 o'clock. MDU, rate case, PU 15-90, work session on the 2nd at 11 a.m.
We got a commission meeting on the 14th. Maybe we could have it on that agenda.
Might be able to. Yeah, I wouldn't see any reason why we couldn't wrap it up.
They can get their refunds back before Thanksgiving.
Okay. All right, anything else for the good of the order? Okay. Thank you. We will conclude the work session on PU 15-90.